Jets in America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Been watching the Democratic debates. I suspect maybe y'all have two, 6 hours, I believe, something like that. 5.5 hours. I watched both on Tuesday night and on Wednesday night. It may surprise you, those of you who aren't longtime listeners who don't listen every week, that this is the first time, really, I'm commenting on the 2020 presidential field, mostly because, and I still kind of feel this way, I would vote for a venomous toad over Donald Trump. I would vote for Marianne Williamson's dark psychic forces over Donald Trump. So, really, it's an embarrassment of riches for me. All of them are better than the current president. And then, of course, we could have to distinguish one from the other. But we do not vote until 2020, even though my state, Virginia, is up there on Super Tuesday. So after New Hampshire, Iowa, South Carolina, and Nevada, actually, it's Iowa first, then New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada. Unless you're in those four states, we all have to wait till the first Super Tuesday in March. And then there's going to be about 15 states all at once, including California, much of the South. We're all going to vote then, but that still leaves us plenty of time. So I'm taking my time. I'm examining each one. I'm not speed dating. I'm going through each one and looking at each one carefully. And when talking about the debates, I will say that I think that CNN tried really, really hard to get them to pound each other. And pound each other they did. And CNN wants that, and it's good ratings, and I get that. The whole point of a primary, I suppose, is to look at the differences between each of the candidates and to see how well they will thump and take a thumping so that when they're up against Donald Trump, they'll know what to do, and we'll know how good they are or not good at it. Still, I felt it all to be a little artificial. After all, take a look at health care. On health care, the candidates largely agree. Every single one of them that I heard, all 20, I believe, support universal health care, support making sure that every American who needs health care can get it, can get that basic health care, whether by the government or by someone else. They all believe it should be done. They all, in essence, support Medicare for all. Now, how do we get there? How do we transition there? Who wants a public option first? Who believes in automatically going there right away? What's covered? What's not covered? Yeah, those are details, and I suppose they matter. But has someone forgotten that the United States Congress writes the laws? The president almost never gets what he or she wants the first time out. The heart of the message, it seems to me, on health care is our values. And Democratic values are everyone should be covered, prices are too high, we should use government power to negotiate down prices and try to cover everyone. Think how different that is from what the Republicans want. Republican role in health care is quite simple. If you're rich, you get the best health care imaginable. If you're middle class, you better stay pretty healthy because the wrong kind of health care very well could bankrupt you. And if you're poor, well, you're out of luck. Sorry, you're going to die. Better luck next life when you, I don't know, are born with a inheritance like Donald Trump. That's the essence of the difference between Democrats and Republicans. So whoever your favorite candidate is, we will be dissecting each of them in this hour. But whether it's Warren or Biden or Sanders or Buttigieg or Harris or Booker or any of them, whoever you like, please remember that their differences are tiny compared to the gulf between the Democrats and the Republicans. And even though CNN wanted a bunch of drama, did you notice every single question last night? Every single question was about Joe Biden. This candidate said something really bad about you. Candidate, do you agree with the really bad thing you said about Joe Biden? Oh, yes, I do. This terrible thing that Joe Biden said. And Joe Biden is saying, wait, I disagree. I'm fine there. I'm good there. Okay, you candidate, you said something bad about Joe Biden. Let's bring that on. And then Joe Biden would come back. Well, wait, I disagree with you there. It's true. And then the story afterwards, of course, CNN and all the other channels were saying, everyone's attacking Biden, everyone's attacking Biden. CNN, you planned it that way. You asked everyone to attack each other. You specifically asked them all to attack Biden. So don't plant the story and then report the candidates doing it as if somehow it was their idea. They may very well have wanted to all go after the front runner. That's usually what happens in a debate. But don't pretend that you didn't plant the seeds. Listen to this clip from the Everyone Attacks Biden.
Why are you the best candidate to heal the racial Mr. Vice President?
Vice President Biden.
I want to address Vice President Biden directly. Under your plan, status quo, you do nothing to hold the insurance companies to task for what they have been doing to American families.
Anytime someone tells you you're going to get something good in 10 years, you should wonder why it takes 10 years.
It looks like one of us has learned the lessons of the past and one of us hasn't. Let me begin by telling you.
Middle ground solutions, like the vice president has proposed, or sort of middling average-sized things are not going to save us.
We have a system right now that's broken. And if you want to compare records, and frankly, I'm shocked that you do, I am happy to do that. Because all of the problems that he is talking about that he created.
Why did you announce in the first day a zero tolerance policy of stop and frisk and hire Rudy Giuliani's guy in 2007 when I was trying to get rid of the crack cocaine?
Mr. Vice President, there's a saying in my community, you're dipping into the Kool-Aid and you don't even know the flavor.
You didn't answer my question.
I wrote the Violence Against Women Act, Lilly Ledbetter. I was deeply involved in making sure the equal pay amendments. I was deeply involved in all these things. You came to Syracuse University with me and said it was wonderful. I'm passionate about the concern making sure women are treated equally. I don't know what's happened except that you're now running for president.
Vice President Biden, I didn't hear your response when the issue came up of all those deportations. You were Vice President of the United States. I didn't hear whether you tried to stop them or not.
The president came along and he's the guy that came up with the idea, first time ever, of dealing with the Dreamers. He put that in the law.
I don't hear an answer from the Vice President. I'm confused. I asked the Vice President point blank, did he use his power to stop those deportations? He went right around the question. Mr. Vice President, you want to be President of the United States. You need to be able to answer the tough questions.
I keep my recommendation to him in private. Unlike you, I expect you would go ahead and say whatever was said privately with him. That's not what I do.
Mr. Vice President, you can't have it both ways. You invoke President Obama more than anybody in this campaign. You can't do it when it's convenient right. And then dodge it when it's not.
I love your affection for me. You spend a lot of time with me.
You know what?
Mr. Vice President, your argument is not with me, it's with science. And unfortunately, your plan is just too late.
Everybody's talking about how terrible I am on these issues. Barack Obama knew exactly who I was. He had 10 lawyers do a background check on everything about me and civil rights and civil liberties. And he chose me and he said it was the best decision he made.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
I'll take his judgment.
So there you go. That's the highlights of Everyone Attack Biden land. And sure, that looked like what the debate was about. And if you watched the debate, that was what you took away from it. All that's true. But if you listen to the highlight reel, what you don't hear is the question CNN asked. And every question was, well, you said this bad thing about Biden. You disagree with Joe Biden on this. They were looking for a fight, and they got their fight. But something made me think of a wrestling match, right? It's all kind of a show. So however you feel about Joe Biden, I probably am not leaning toward him right now, if you have to ask. I think I'm leaning a little bit towards Elizabeth Warren, though my mind is very much open, and I really don't want to make up my mind until the end of this year. After all, we have a very important election in Virginia in 2019. I'll be on the ballot to be reelected as a Virginia House delegate. I'm unopposed. My real concern will be for flipping the Virginia House and Senate. Virginia is the only state with elections in 2019 where Democrats have a chance to change history, to take a state that has been a red state for decades and to finally turn it solidly blue, to become a truly progressive state, and we can do it this year in November. That's going to be my focus. So I'm watching the presidential campaign, but we have time. Take your time. Get to know the candidates. I would argue you feel free to contribute to two or three or four of them. Don't put your eggs in the basket yet. Let's see who it all shakes out with. Let's see who's remains standing 3-4 months from now. Joe Biden will be there. Elizabeth Warren will be there. Bernie Sanders will be there. I think it's pretty clear that Pete Buttigieg and Kamala Harris will be there. I suspect Cory Booker will be there. Some of the others that I also like, Joaquin Castro, he seems like a good man to me. Amy Klobuchar,
She seems good to me. I think they can make it. Most of the rest, I think, will go by the wayside. Later on, we'll play the candidate that I will miss most, Marianne Williamson. Somehow, I will miss her dark psychic forces. And I'm a little sad about it. We'll be back, though, with more debate discussion right after this break.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
I still contend that the Democrats agreed more than they disagreed, despite the fact that all the focus is on their disagreement. You know, I remember back in 2008 when I had a really tough choice between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. I liked them both a lot. Finally did vote for Barack Obama, but it was a really, really close choice for me, and I would have been very happy if she had won the nomination and the presidency back in 2008. But I remember the only point that they disagreed on, the only point that anyone could find where they really disagreed, I mean, they have different backgrounds and different sort of ways of addressing issues. But when it came to the actual issues, what did they disagree on? Well, the thing they disagreed on, do you even remember this from 2008? It's been 11 years now. What they disagreed on, apparently, at the time, was that Hillary Clinton insisted that for the health care program to work, the Affordable Care Act, a thing that would later be called Obamacare, she said that you have to be penalized if you choose not to be in the system, so there would be an incentive for you to get in the system. Barack Obama took the more populist choice, I guess, in saying, nope, that's not required to make it work. Hillary Clinton said, yep, this little tax is required to make it work. And they must have debated that 50 times in the primary. And as you recall, in a very, very close primary race, Barack Obama edged out Hillary Clinton in delegates. She may well have gotten more votes, but he edged her out in delegates with caucuses and won the nomination. By the way, that was very close. The Sanders-Clinton race was not close. She beat him very solidly. In any case, Obama wins the nomination. He wins the presidency. He becomes president, and he starts Obamacare. He starts the Affordable Care Act, and lo and behold, he discovers that in order to make the market work, you need to have a penalty for people who decide not to join the market. In other words, the one thing he and Hillary would disagree on month after month after month, debate after debate after debate, the one thing that CNN and MSNBC and Fox kept harping on, because honestly, there were very, very little difference between them ideologically. And it turns out Obama took Hillary view. It really should be called Hillary Care. He took her view, and it became law, and now it's all called Obamacare on the one thing he and Hillary disagreed on. So I think the debates can magnify differences that really aren't that great. That's why I guess I really want to focus on how much they had in common. And we will get to the differences. Don't worry, we have a long campaign season. I'm going to have to vote. You're going to have to vote. But let's focus at least a lot of this hour on what they agreed on. They all agreed that we should have universal coverage. They all agreed that the government should be able to negotiate down coverage. They all agreed that the profits that healthcare companies make are obscene and that people should have a chance to get healthcare rather than die from trying. Again, all differences with Republicans. Republicans believe that if you're too poor to afford health care, you just die or go to the emergency room, which ends up costing everybody a lot more. They all agree on immigration. Every single one of them agrees that we shouldn't be separating families at the border, shouldn't be ripping children from their mother's arms, from their father's hands, throwing them in cages where they sleep on concrete floors, not even have the decency to treat them as we treated the 9/11 terrorists. After all, the 9/11 terrorists, they got mattresses, they got toothbrushes, they got regular baths. They weren't crowded in cells like the children are, 15 kids to a cell meant for two. We treated the murderers of 9/11 better than we are currently treating these poor, wretched children who've escaped from El Salvador or Guatemala or Honduras, coming here because they were threatened with death where they were.
And not only are we doing this, but it's flagrantly against the law, because our law requires us to allow kids, adults, everyone, to seek asylum. Where do those laws come from? They actually come from the Holocaust. They come from the fact that during the 1930s and 40s, we turned Jewish children away and adults, took them back to the gas chambers because we just didn't allow them in. Well, since that time, there's actually an international treaty and U.S. law that says that when people are escaping death, they have a right to come here. Now you have to sort it out. You got to figure out who's escaping death and who's just coming here for economic advantage. As far as I'm concerned, people coming here for economics are okay with me. That's how a lot of our ancestors got here, right? Remember the Irish potato famine? That's how our folks with Irish heritage came here in the 1840s. During the worldwide depressions, people would come here. So I am okay with economics, but and people coming here for that reason. But did you note that the differences between the candidates were minor? They were talking about, well, should we use civil law or criminal law for deportations? Should we lower them down below where Obama did it or about where Obama was? None of them were talking about separating children from their parents. None of them were talking about the openly racist things that Donald Trump is saying, basically send all children of color back. Heck, he wants to send Americans back. He wants to take African-Americans, people like Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, who is a descendant of slaves, whose family's been here for hundreds of years, and, quote, send her back, unquote, when Donald Trump is the child of immigrants. He has less right to be here than she does. Open racism, again, that's what the Republicans support. Democrats fight it. When we come back after this segment, I want to play for you a number of clips that show, well, while there's a diversity of views among Democrats, the heart of our values remains the same. I don't want you to get caught up in the disagreements. Yes, you should understand, because I know I don't, what Kamala Harris was talking about when she was arguing with Tulsi Gabbard over her record. And yes, what Booker and Biden were discussing with regard to his record. Sure, that matters. And I guess we should get into some of the distinctions between Elizabeth Warren's plan for climate change and Jay Inslee. There are differences among the candidates, but again, let's not magnify it. The Democratic values, civil rights are there, of helping working people are there, supporting unions, caring about climate change. Did you hear a single candidate deny the existence of climate change? Of course not. They could argue about this plan or that plan, but the plans are to be decided by Congress. Remember, all of this is just an idea. So see who you like. See who's tough. See who you think could be in the ring with Donald Trump. See who has a good biography. But don't get too caught up in the details. I think they're all just fine. This is Mark Levine. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine, talking about the debates we've just been watching and probably have a different take on this for most people, emphasizing the agreement more than the disagreement. That said, it is important, if you didn't watch the debates, to get some of the highlights of what happened. And I've been talking a lot about the second night where everyone ganged up on Joe Biden. Let me play for you some highlights from night one.
If it's true that if we embrace a far-left agenda, they're going to say we're a bunch of crazy socialists. If we embrace a conservative agenda, you know what they're going to do? They're going to say we're a bunch of crazy socialists. So let's just stand up for the right policy, go out there and defend it. That's the policy I'm putting forward, not because I think it's the right triangulation between Republicans here and Democrats there, because I think it's the right answer. People like my mother-in-law, who is here, whose life was saved by the ACA, but who is still far too vulnerable to the fact that the insurance industry does not care about her.
Medicare for All is comprehensive. It covers all health care needs for senior citizens. It will finally include dental care, hearing aids, and eyeglasses.
But you don't know
second
that.
Of all.
You don't know that,
second
Bernie.
Of all.
We'll come to you in a second,
I do know when I wrote the damn bill.
So, again, I think if we're going to force Americans to make these radical changes, they're not going to go along. You throw your hands up. But you haven't... Oh, I can do it. But you haven't implemented the plans. Us governors and mayors are the ones that we have to pick up all the pieces when suddenly the government's supposed to take over all these responsibilities and there's no preparation, the details aren't worked. You can't just spring a plan on the world and expect it to succeed.
You know, I don't understand why anybody goes to all the trouble of running for president of the United States just to talk about what we really can't do and shouldn't fight for. In Washington is corruption. It is giant corporations that have taken our government and that are holding it by the throat. And we need to have the courage to fight back against that. And until we're ready to do that, it's just more of the same. Well, I'm ready to get in this fight. I'm ready to win this
fight.
Thank
you, Senator Congressman.
Flint is just the tip of the iceberg. I was recently in Denmark, South Carolina, where there is a lot of talk about it being the next Flint. We have an administration that has gutted the Clean Water Act. We have communities, particularly communities of color and disadvantaged communities all over this country, who are suffering from environmental injustice. I assure you, I lived in Grosse Pointe. What happened in Flint would not have happened in Grosse Pointe. This is part of the dark underbelly of American society. The racism, the bigotry, and the entire conversation that we're having here today. If you think any of this wonkiness is going to deal with this dark psychic force of the collectivized hatred that this president is bringing up in this country, then I'm afraid that the Democrats are going to see some very dark days. We need to say it like it is. It's bigger than Flint. It's all over this country. It's particularly people of color. It's particularly people who do not have the money to fight back. And if the Democrats don't start saying it, then why would those people feel that they're there for us? And if those people don't feel it, they won't vote for us. And Donald Trump will win.
If it's true that if we embrace...
So it may surprise you to know that I agree with my fellow radio host, Marianne Williamson, about something. By the way, I know Marianne Williamson. I met her when I first started in radio back in 2003. I think it was called the IE Radio Network. It was a union-sponsored network. I was her guest host for her back 16 years ago. Thought she was a little flighty then, but she was very nice to me, and she just seems to be a little out there on some issues. But while I don't know about the dark psychic forces, she's right about a few things. She's right that if Flint had happened in Grosse Pointe, which is a rich white suburb of Detroit, it wouldn't have happened. They wouldn't have allowed rich white people to suffer lead poisoning the way they allowed poor black kids to suffer. It's that simple. It's the pervasiveness of racism in our country, not to mention some socioeconomic prejudice as well. Rich people get it, poor get help from the government, poor people don't. White people get help, black people don't. So that's a problem. And the question is, when we're addressing things like racism or climate change or immigration or healthcare, which plan do we pick? Do we pick the more moderate incremental plan? Maybe the public option in healthcare, I'd probably lean toward that. I'm maybe a bit more pragmatic in my progressivism. I do support Medicare for all, but I don't mind a transition for a few years. Or do we jump right to Medicare for all? You know, we can debate that. Reasonable people can disagree on that. But I agree with Pete Buttigieg when he says, you know what happens if we develop progressive principles? They say we're crazy socialists. You know what happens if we choose a more conservative option? They say we're crazy socialists. He's right about that. The Republicans will call us the same names no matter what plan we choose, and that's because they don't do nuance anymore. The few Republicans left who know how to do nuance, well, George will, and I think that's it. John McCain is dead. None of them are elected politicians. Republicans just talk about racism all the time and try to promote hatred and try to convince everyone that Democrats are socialists or they like black people too much, or gay people, or women, or immigrants. You get the idea. But distinctions about policy? When's the last time you heard a Republican talk about policy? What's their health care policy? I defy anyone to say what health care policy is. Well, we want to make sure that people with pre-existing conditions die. Okay, but that's not much of a policy, Republicans. We want to stop Obamacare. Why? Because it has Obama in the name. Okay, but what's your plan? We need a Republican health care plan. Yeah, what is it? It's the Republican one. You can go a long time in circles this way. Republicans don't even do policy anymore. All they really do is hate and fear.
So Pete Buttigieg is right. No matter what we decide as Democrats, no matter which nominee we put up, they're going to call us crazy socialists. They're going to use every racist term in the book. They're going to do that. So we might as well pick the person we like the best. I strongly agree with Pete on that. So listen to the candidates and decide who you think has the best plan. There's even an argument, and I've heard it from folks in my family. Well, we got to go with Joe Biden because he is the most likely to win. And there are certain indicators now that that's true. After all, Uncle Joe, he's from Scranton, Pennsylvania. He can win that state. Maybe he can win the Midwest. He's a guy who appeals to, you know, working-class white men, the people that we lost so heavily to Donald Trump, yada, yada, yada. There's some truth to that. But I wonder how many people in the middle are left. Remember, Hillary Clinton was at one time well-loved by two-thirds of the American people. That's back when she was Secretary of State to Barack Obama. Two-thirds. She had an approval rating of 67%. Then came the Russians and Donald Trump and the Republicans and pretended that the fact that she used a specific server for email was somehow a national crime to lock her up. Remember that foolishness? They can make that up about anyone. They will make Biden a crazy socialist if he's the nominee. So again, I'm not against Uncle Joe. I'm not against Joe Biden. There are reasons, I think, to support some of the other candidates. But look, whoever you support, don't do it because you think they're going to win. You support the candidate that your heart is with. And I'll tell you something. We are not where we were when Joe Biden was beginning his time in the Senate, right? The 70s, the 80s, the 90s, well into the early O's, the Clinton years. There was a time when the way American politics worked was, if you're in the Democratic Party, you move to the left. You're in the Republican Party, you move to the right. You do that in the primaries. And then, after you get the nomination, you scramble back to the center to get those moderates that are going to put you over. And that was the tried and true political way to win a presidential election for, hey, the last 50 years. I think we have to throw that model out the window because I don't think there's anyone left in the middle anymore. With Fox News and the right-wing talk radio, they have largely succeeded, and Donald Trump has helped in this, in polarizing us. We're no longer left, right, and center on the spectrum. We are red America and we're blue America, and there's almost no one in the middle anymore. And the few that are in the middle, well, they're the people who don't care about politics and largely aren't voting. All you have to do is look at the Virginia elections of 2017 and the national elections of 2018. Democrats did well in those elections because our base was fired up. We weren't so fired up in 2016. Let's face it, if the people who should have come out to vote, who could have come out to vote, in places like Detroit, Michigan, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Madison, Wisconsin, if they had gotten out to vote, same numbers they did with President Obama, well, Hillary Clinton would be president right now. So it's always going to be a question. Should you go toward the middle or should you go for a base strategy? The base meaning, you know, the progressives for the Democrats, the conservatives for the Republicans. I'm going for the base these days. I actually think it's the better political strategy, totally apart from the ideas. And again, I agree with Pete Buttigieg. You got to go with the person whose ideas you support the most. But don't just vote for the person in the middle because you think they're going to win. There is no middle anymore. Like it or lump it, Donald Trump has polarized this nation into two competing factions who largely hate each other. Donald Trump has done a really good job at whipping up that hate and getting us to hate one another. Well, if there's no one in the middle anymore, then why should you go to the middle? If we need a progressive agenda, because that's what gets our base to turn out, and otherwise our folks, our solid progressives, are going to stay home, then let's hit the rafters. Let's go for everything we can do with the progressive agenda. Look at the millennials today. Millennials, people under 35, are strongly supporting Democrats. Now, young people tended to be liberal for a long time now. But you know what happened in 2017 and 2018? Millennials came out and voted. They voted in greater numbers than they ever have before. They always supported Democrats, but now they're voting. Well, many of them didn't vote in 2016. Many of them were disappointed with Hillary. Many of them were tricked by the Russians and, frankly, by some Sanders supporters that didn't come fully on board, and they didn't vote. We got Donald Trump. So let's get millennials excited. Let's get African Americans excited. Let's get Latinos excited. You know, Latinos, if they would turn out, would be a massive force for the Democratic Party. This president is the worst president on immigration in, I don't know, I was going to say 50 years, but you may have to go back a lot farther. This guy hates immigrants. He hates people who legally apply for asylum. We've got to get the Latino base out. We've got to get women out. This is a man who has sexually assaulted, at least have been accused of sexually assaulting 22 separate women. This is a man who treats women with contempt. Why aren't women getting out there? And why aren't working class men and women getting out there? This is a guy who, after all, is taxing middle class people, working class people, more than ever before. All these tariffs on China are harming farmers more than ever before. And all in order to give massive tax cuts to very rich people. Heck, even if you're an evangelical Christian and you haven't sold your soul, you shouldn't support a guy who clearly has no respect for his marriage, no respect for the church, no knowledge of anything. I mean, what evangelical would support this flamboyant New York playboy guy who sexually assaults women all the time? Really, unless you are a corrupt billionaire, straight white male, Christian but not too Christian, and you're pretty corrupt yourself and you're racist, I'm not sure why you would see anything in Donald Trump. So we need to make a decision in the primary. I need to make one too. But don't magnify the differences too much. The main difference is between us and Donald Trump. When we come back, we'll be playing more clips from the debate. This is Mark Levine, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, dissecting the presidential debates for the Democrats. As I said, I like them all. I would vote for a venomous toad over Donald Trump. I certainly like all the top candidates very much. Some of the lesser-known candidates I like less, but that's okay. They really don't have a chance. As Elizabeth Warren said to John Delaney, who has no chance, why would you even take the time of running for president and then say all these things can't be done? It's true, we have to be practical. We have to find ways to find solutions. But we do have to think outside the box and think big. They're going to call us socialists anyway, says Mayor Pete. So let's go and do the best we can. Some of the lesser candidates, though, every now and then, I thought struck gold. And I want to give a shout out to someone I actually went to law school with, went to Yale Law School with, Michael Bennett. I don't know if he remembers me. I think he maybe vaguely does. I remember him. He doesn't look that different from that time, a little bit heavier maybe. He's not a strong candidate. I don't think he's going to win. Sorry, Michael. He's kind of got a sleepy voice, and I just don't see him as one of the most dynamic candidates. But I did think he gave a really good answer on an issue that surprised me. The issue was race. You see, it was really weird. CNN was asking everyone how they can be the best person on race. I thought that was a bad question. No one should say they're the best. Lots of people can talk about race. There's not only a single person. And to ask a white man why he's the best guy on race seems a little awkward. But Michael Bennett, to my surprise, this tall, blonde, white guy, kind of hit it out of the park. Listen to what he had to say.
Why are you the best candidate to heal the racial divide that exists in this country today, which has been stoked by the president's racist rhetoric?
Yeah, first of all, the president's racist rhetoric should be enough grounds for everybody in this country to vote him out of office. That one thing alone should be enough. Second, Don, I want to answer your question by tagging on the conversation we were just having. This is the fourth debate that we have had, and the second time that we have been debating what people did 50 years ago with busing, when our schools are as segregated today as they were 50 years ago. We need a conversation about what's happening now. And when there's a group of kids in this country that don't get preschool through no fault of their own, and another group does, equal is not equal. And we've got a group of K-12 schools that are good because families can spend $1 million, and you've got the Detroit public schools that are as segregated as they were, equal is not equal. And let me tell you something else, Don. I believe you can draw a straight line from slavery through Jim Crow, through the banking and the redlining to the mass incarceration that we were talking about on this stage a few minutes ago. But you know what other line I can draw? 88% of the people in our prisons dropped out of high school. Let's fix our school system and maybe we can fix the prison pipeline that we have.
Now, what you might not know about Michael Bennett is he is the former state superintendent for Colorado, for the state of Colorado before he became United States Senator. And he made some really good points there, points I'm going to remember. You know, it's not often a presidential candidate gives me sort of talking points, but boy, did he give a good one. He said, why are we talking, and this refers back to Biden and Kamala Harris, why are we talking about the busing issues of 30, 40, 50 years ago when we have segregation now? Busing didn't work because Detroit is as segregated as it ever has been. Of course, this debate is taking place in Detroit. And we don't have equality. And as he says, I can draw a straight line from slavery to Jim Crow to redlining. Redlining, of course, is when banks refuse to allow people to get mortgages if they were the wrong race in the wrong neighborhood. And he points out that 88% of the people in prison didn't finish high school. That's a powerful statistic. And his point is clear. The best way out of racism is through education, is through ending segregation. I thought we had that battle back in 1954. We aren't done yet. We still have segregation. And with good education and making sure, as he points out, that people in rich areas who already get good education, that people in poor areas get good education too. Look, it's not your fault if you're born rich or poor. Well, whatever you believe in, whatever you believe in, equal opportunity, which I believe in, capitalism, I'm not a socialist. Capitalism assumes that you at least get a close to equal start. And then, yes, then your talent should lead you as high as they can. But if you don't have an equal start, how can capitalism possibly work? Part of the problem with racism is black people are poor in America, and they're not poor because it's their fault. They're poor because of slavery and Jim Crow and redlining. There's a reason why black families have so much less wealth than white families. And then we compound it with education. We educate rich kids. We don't educate poor kids. We educate white kids. We don't educate black kids. As he points out, the direct line from school to prison goes through the kids who dropped out in high school. So good on you, Michael Bennett. I don't think you're going to be a president, but I'm going to remember that line. Education is the key, and we really haven't talked a lot about education in this presidential campaign. I don't think he said anything that the rest of the field didn't agree with. But it's nice to hear, I don't know, a white guy talk very openly and honestly and directly about race. So good on you, Michael Bennett. This is Mark Levin. I hope you've enjoyed all of our debate context. There will be many, many more debates before it's out. Make up your mind. Choose the candidate who you think you most want to be president. Any of them are better than the current occupant of the White House. We might as well pick our best one. But one thing's for sure, if you don't get your first choice, you better vote Democratic in the fall of 2020. This is Mark Levin, signing off.